Hurry. It's tomorrow. As we've been telling you for the past several months, this is the first step to selecting some of the top seats in the state, including governor. Later, we will talk about some of the big contested races tonight. But first, we sit down with Republican Robin Ficker in the candidate's corner. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. We need to note that Republican candidates Dan Cox and Kelly Schultz did not respond to our requests for interviews. Mr. Ficker, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Well, thank you, Harold. I'm the only candidate of all the candidates in both parties who's calling for a tax cut. I want to cut the state sales tax 2 cents, making it 4 cents instead of 6 cents for every dollar. And that will result in a $780 a year household savings. And in addition to that fiscal stimulus for each family, it'll act as a lure for all the big companies that have been either making multi-billion dollar expansions or moving their national headquarters and bring them to Maryland with some well-paying jobs. I can just give you a brief list of the companies that have shunned Maryland in just the last couple of years.
Well, before you do that, we need to reintroduce you to our listeners. I know who you are, but many of our listeners don't. And so before you talk about your issues, we need to talk about you. Who are you? Introduce yourself to our listeners. Give me the Cliff Notes version of Robin Ficker, please.
I was born in Montgomery County. I've lived here all my life. I've placed 25 ballot measures on the ballot in Montgomery County, Maryland's largest county, by collecting 10,000 valid signatures, which means 18,000 signatures for each. Those ballot questions have received 2,537,403 votes, or more votes than Ben Jealous and Larry Hogan got put together. I believe in peaceful change. We pushed term limits through. We pushed a limit through on property taxes. We kept garbage dumps and sewage sludge trenching out of residential zones. So I've been a proponent of peaceful change, more or less acting as governor for peaceful change for many years, and now I want the top job so that we can bring some jobs to Maryland.
But Mr. Ficker, the only job, as you say, that you've been elected to was a delegate back in the late 70s. You have been a candidate for several elected positions in the state, Congress, Montgomery County Executive, and the like, but you've not been successful. Why should someone take your candidacy for governor seriously?
Well, I'm the only one calling for a tax cut. We've got 9.1% inflation. The family budget is hurting. We've got gas taxes way up. I've placed 25 measures on the ballot. I've served in the legislature. I get along with people of both parties, of both sides of the Republican Party. I want to unite the Republican Party so that we can bring peaceful change to Maryland. I've also been a defense attorney in the past, represented over 40,000 clients in federal courts, Maryland courts, and have always looked out for the individual rights of citizens. I'll be the first governor to have marched with Dr. Martin Luther King in the March for Jobs and Freedom on Washington. I was appointed by Rosa Parks to be the first general counsel for the National Caucus on the Black Aged. I stand up for individual rights.
But you've also had some legal troubles. You've been disbarred. And I think that that may give a lot of people pause. How do you respond to that in addition to some of the other difficulties that you have had during the course of your legal and political career?
I've completed 40,000 cases in Maryland courts, which is more cases than all the other gubernatorial candidates put together. I've overturned 4 state laws in federal court, including one just this past year, where I overturned the limits on duration and size of political signs on the Eastern Shore. So I've been very successful in court. There were this most recent case where I represented someone for free and who was still never shown up for court. We misfiled a motion to continue, but that was one mistake. Everybody makes mistakes in life. No one is perfect, but 40,000 cases is a remarkable career. 25 ballot questions is remarkable. That's a Maryland record.
Our listeners have some questions for you. I want to try to get these in. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to Republican Robin Ficker. He wants to be the next Republican governor of the state of Maryland. Lines are open. Let's go to Marissa. Marissa calling from Wheaton. Thanks for calling, Marissa. What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to say that I think that it's refreshing to consider a Republican Republican candidate. From what I've seen in other areas regarding Democrat leadership, it hasn't been too favorable. I am for this gentleman that's speaking.
Robin Ficker. Go ahead. Right
ahead. Okay, Robin Ficker. I'm a resident of Montgomery County, and I am for term limits. I think people need to be, you know, their works need to be examined, and especially I am for the lowering of taxes. Property tax has gone up very much in Montgomery County. But for the most part, I think it's refreshing to consider a Republican as a governor, because there's been so much confusion with Ehrlich. That's all I want to say. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. Ficker, go right ahead.
I don't ask you to vote for me just because I'm a Republican, but look at the companies that have shunned Maryland: Amazon, Apple, Facebook, Global Foundries, Boeing, Google, Intel, Microsoft, Nucor Steel, Samsung, Texas Instruments, Taiwan Semiconductors, Tesla, Toyota. They've all either moved their national headquarters or made multi-billion dollar expansions, but they've all shunned Maryland. We need some well-paying jobs. You know that Google has a $9.5 billion capital improvement program this year and is not spending $1 in Maryland.
Okay. Let's go to John. John calling from Maryland. John, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Great. How is
I'm doing just fine. Go right ahead.
My question to the candidate is, where do you stand on compensation for the descendants of enslaved Marylanders or Americans who reside in Maryland? You might call it reparations, but we call it slavery compensation that could be paid through corporations or any industries that benefited from our ancestors being enslaved in your state for 360 years.
Let me see what Mr. Ficker has to say about that. John, thank you so much. Mr. Ficker, go right ahead, please.
Well, you know, I've represented maybe 25,000 African-Americans in court. Believe me, I'm always for getting them reparations in court cases, getting a fair shake. Now, getting payment because your great-grandfather was enslaved improperly, I'm very much opposed to slaving, lynching, all those terrible things that used to happen. I was in the United States Military Academy. My squad leader was the first black general in the Army, Freddie Gordon. And, you know, I'm used to treating people fairly, make sure they are treated fairly. Every Monday morning, I'm going to have an open house so that anyone who's discriminated against can come and talk to me, and we'll rectify that right away. But payments because of what something happened to several generations ago, I am not there yet.
So let me ask you this. So are you suggesting that compensation for Jews who were tortured and killed in camps in Germany, even if they are here, should not have been compensated? What about the Japanese who were also put in internment camps here in the United States during World War II? Is that the same? Because I will say that many black people would say yes. It's just a difference of time, but still, bad treatment based on race is the same thing.
Well, you know, I mean, I know the Japanese were unfairly interned, but many of these people that were interned, they now have grandchildren. So their grandchildren are coming saying, well, hey, we want payment because what happened to our grandparents? I don't think so. I'm not there yet. We have too many. We have to improve the infrastructure. We've got to cure poverty. We have too many people in poverty now. We need adequate housing. We've got to help people in ways that they can use present. We've got to bring in some well-paying jobs. That should be our focus.
Let me go to Abney. Abney, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Abney. What's on your mind?
Well, I was wondering, if you got elected, and the problem we have going on now is people just coming across the border and have nowhere to go, and, you know, it's become a major problem. So what are your plans on doing, tackling that problem if you got elected?
Well, you know, essentially, I think they've repealed the immigration laws. We need to have immigration laws so that people can come across who have been vetted for disease, for criminal records. We need to have people that are hopefully going to be helping out our country in a positive way. We have to have a legal system. Right now, they're coming across in such numbers we can't possibly, it's all catch and release. We can't even question these folks. They're here and they're gone tomorrow. We need to have a legal immigration system, just like we need to have marriage laws, property laws. We can't have open borders.
Abney, thank you so much. Before I go to the next phone call, question for you, Mr. Ficker. Do you believe that the election was stolen from President Trump?
Well, you know, I
that's
think,
a yes or no question. I mean, either you do or you don't.
No, I don't think so. However, I will say this. There's something unfair in Maryland, and I'll tell you what it is today. Every Maryland voter has been sent an absentee ballot application, which is fine with me if they fill it out and send it in for the present election. But there's also a space on that ballot that says, do you want an absentee ballot for all future elections? Now, whoever fills that out, some people are going to die eventually. Some people are going to move. So we're going to have a lot of hot ballots lying around. You wouldn't leave your credit cards lying around. So why would you want hot ballots lying around? I think if they requested for a particular election, that's fine with me, but not for all future elections.
Okay. Let me go to Sid. Sid calling from Virginia. Sid, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Harold.
Sure.
Good to hear you. I just wanted to add one more thing to the introduction of Mr. Ficker. I don't know him from Adam, but I remember watching those old Washington Bullets games in the 1970s and 80s, and the announcers would point out this gentleman sitting in the stands. I think he had a cane in his hand. He would be heckling the opposing team. So as a Bullets fan, thank you. But I'm not into politics, but whatever you do, I would say please do it for the common person. Every candidate gets out there and says things that people want to hear, whether they're Democrat or Republican. But, you know, you got to just think about the normal common person, you know, and think from their perspective. That's all I got to say. I mean, there's so much I got to say, but I don't want to get into politics. But
well, this is a political discussion, Sid, so you're welcome to do
Thanks.
So.
I want to make Maryland a sports state. The heck with the Big Ten. Let's make it the Big One. I want us to win in basketball NCAA championships. Chucky Barkley said I was the number one fan in the NBA. I'd like to bring the Baltimore Bombers new NBA team to Baltimore so we can have a little competition with our team here. I'd like to see the Ravens and the Commanders end up in the Super Bowl together. That would be wonderful. I want to stress the need for athletics and competition because it teaches you teamwork, it teaches you your limits, teaches you how to excel. I'm very much pro sports and pro athletics throughout our state.
And I need to get in. Sid, thank you so much for your question or your comment. I do want to ask you one thing. And this is one of the biggest issues in the state. And I only have a little bit of time left for you. What is the answer to the surge in crime in Baltimore and some of the other areas of the state that are still wrestling with this issue?
Well, I can tell you, I am not going to say anything bad about Baltimore, but I'll tell you this. I know the governor of Arizona, Doug Ducey. You know what he did? He was able to bring in a $12 billion Taiwan semiconductor plant and a $20 billion Intel semiconductor plant, the largest investment ever in Arizona. And as a result, he raised state salaries and he was able to cut the taxes. If we had a $20 billion semiconductor plant right near Baltimore, then these squeegee guys could be making $60 an hour making semiconductors. We haven't had any big job factories move into Maryland. We had the Bethlehem Steel before.
Well, you did have Amazon, actually. You have had Amazon, and as a Baltimore resident, I know that there are a great many people who work for Amazon, including some neighbors of mine, and their lives have literally been turned around. But that's not an editorial.
There's a distribution plant there, but the Amazon plant, the Amazon headquarters with 25,000 jobs averaging 155,000 each, that moved to Northern Virginia. It should have come to Maryland. I'm very familiar with Amazon because my son-in-law is head of recruiting for the Seattle Seahawks. I go out there quite a bit. They were putting up a new skyscraper in Seattle, Amazon was, every year. But then Seattle wanted to put a per-employee annual head tax on them, and they said, no thanks, we're moving. Now they're in Northern Virginia. They should have come to Maryland.
Well, Robin Ficker, thank you so much for spending some time with us. Good luck, sir. Again, the Maryland primary is tomorrow. We're going to be talking more about that on the other side of this show. Good luck to you, sir. Thank you for your time.
H-U-R. Thank you, Howard.
We'll be back in just a moment with Reese Colbert to provide some analysis on all the big races tomorrow. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Stretch is next. He's in for John Mons with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. I'll be back on Sirius XM in just a bit. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about the Maryland primary tomorrow. Polls open at 7 a.m. and they close at 8 p.m. Joining me now is, as promised, Reese Colbert, political analyst and founder of Black Women Views. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Hey, Reese, how are you?
Hey, how are you? Good to be here again. Thank you so much.
I am really excited about tomorrow. I'm excited because, I got my mail-in ballot a while back. And I was sitting and I was just looking at it and looking at it. But, I'm kind of old school. I want to go in to my polling place and I am just chomping at the bit. I probably will get no sleep tonight because voting is it's a thing.
Yeah.
It's a thing. And although we haven't seen the big numbers during this primary so far, I have a feeling that, when all of the mail-in ballots come in, we're going to see a bit of a surge. But I don't even care about those folks. I'm concerned about my surge.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and I hope that we see a de-surge of all these road signs because it's getting ridiculous and super cluttered. So that's my favorite thing about the primaries is hopefully people will go back and take all those signs down if you did not win your race.
Yeah, well, it's a good place to get some kindling if you have a fireplace. So from your perspective, because we may very well not know who are the primary winners tomorrow because of the way, the mail-in ballots and everything are. But what do you think will be the big takeaway from tomorrow? What's your perspective?
Well, if you don't mind, can I first just weigh in on Robin Ficker's?
You're most certainly welcome to do so.
Okay, because, I think one of the interesting dynamics in Maryland is that even though there's a large Black population, there's a Democratic supermajority in the legislature, we have had a Republican governor, Larry Hogan, for the past 8 years, and he has been pretty popular. So it was quite remarkable to hear Robin Ficker talk about the way that businesses have shunned Maryland when we've already had a Republican governor for the past 8 years. So to me, that speaks to the failure of Republican governors to be that silver bullet that they claim to be in terms of recruiting companies here. So, and a lot of the reasons that
Larry Hogan popular is because the Democratic legislature blocks his most unpopular policies from happening. So I just think it's interesting the way that he talked, and even the callers that called in support of him almost seem to be unaware or not willing to acknowledge the Republican leadership in terms of the governor and the lieutenant governor for the past 8 years.
But I would
the other thing I,
no, go
I
ahead. No, please
say,
go ahead.
And the other thing I just want to say, too, it's very interesting. The common thread for all of these Republicans that are running in all these races is they don't want to talk about the issues that typically distinguish Republicans from Democrats, like abortion. He has not gone on record about his abortion stance, about, you know, a variety of things, voting rights and things of that nature. He sounded kind of anti-voting rights if you listened right between the lines about the absentee ballot stuff. And so those are the kinds of things that people have to pay attention to. I think lower taxes sound great, but they rarely deliver on that, and then they turn around and they pull a Glenn Youngkin in Virginia and have this radical Republican agenda. So but, I just want people to be aware of that.
But I would also say that this issue that, you know, Republicans have been, you know, toying with as it, you know, as it relates to Maryland, the so-called, you know, stop the steal, the so-called, you know, Trump won, the, you know, the all of those issues did not stop a Larry Hogan from being elected and reelected. It did not stop a Robert Ehrlich from being elected.
Right.
And
right.
So, you know, one could argue, even anecdotally, that the elections in Maryland are pretty daggone fair.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, that Larry Hogan is a relatively what we used to think of as a mainstream Republican. Now the mainstream Republican is a Trump Republican. But I always am weary of a candidate that only wants to talk about taxes. They only want to talk about one or two issues when the voters really have to evaluate a wide variety of issues, because Republicans across the country are making life very difficult for women and for Black people in particular. And so I just want to emphasize, don't just be, you know, wowed by cutting taxes. Taxes are too high. They're too high for Prince George's County. They're too high at the state level. I would wholeheartedly agree with that. But that does not mean that we disregard the other aspects that they're either trying to conceal by not being transparent about it, or they're radical when they do actually open up their mouth about those issues.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about Maryland's primary tomorrow. Those souls are going to the polls. This soul will be at the polls tomorrow morning, let me tell you. Like I said, I'm really excited about voting. I just that's just my thing. But let's talk about the people who will be on the ballots. And let's first talk about this congressional race between Glenn Ivey and Donna Edwards. You don't want to be close to either one of them if you know, if they're standing next to each other, because you could be pierced by some pretty sharp elbows.
Yeah, it, to me, it's uncharacteristically vitriolic. I mean, I've been in this area for quite a while now, several elections, including, you know, two presidential elections. And I haven't seen anything this nasty for a congressional race. So I don't know exactly where all this animus is coming from. I don't think it's really helpful to either candidate. And, you know, I started to see some Glenn Ivey ads, and I thought they were really positive. But then all this mudslinging got involved. And I think it's a turnoff. I think that there have been studies that shown that negative campaigning is a turnoff to voters. So I think it could really backfire on both of them with the way that this mudslinging is being thrown around.
Yeah, that it can be. And for those who are still wondering, this is for Maryland's 4th congressional district. Donna Edwards held the seat at one point, lost. She wants it back, and so we'll have to see, you know, who turns up on tomorrow as the winner. We may or may not know, you know, again tomorrow, the way the count goes. Races that could be a humdinger is the race for Montgomery County Executive. Mark Elrich has had a really up and down time. A lot of this, of course, having to do with the pandemic. Some people like his style, his flat-footed, plain-spoken style. Some people not so much. Your thoughts about what he's up against in Montgomery County?
Well, I mean, I think this is a hard cycle for incumbents. Typically, usually, that's a huge advantage. But, when you are overseeing a pandemic, there are going to be people that are dissatisfied with certain things, people that are satisfied with certain things. COVID is on the surge again. We don't have a lot of people masking. There's not a lot of, booster uptake. And violence is, or I shouldn't say violence, but I'll say crime is, higher than it had been. Inflation is hitting people's pockets. And so I think that there is room for a person to really give a persuasive counter to all of these incumbents. And now he, I think, is more vulnerable than other ones, like, for instance, Angela Alsobrooks and Prince George's. But, I think, we'll see if it cuts for him or against him because of the discontent on a variety of issues.
Well, for example, you're talking about Angela Alsobrooks, and of course, Aisha Braveboy. Am I overstating it to say that it's baked in? Braveboy is running unopposed. So, basically, it would seem to me that they are in positions to allow their political clout to ride in endorsing individuals and less worried about their own seats.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I talked earlier about the signs. I've hardly seen any signs for County Executive Alsobrooks or for Aisha Braveboy. And, they're popular. They don't really have any formidable candidates. I won't say credible. I'll say formidable candidates running against, Aisha Braveboy is unopposed, but Angela Alsobrooks has a couple of people running against her, but nobody that I think has made a compelling case. And we have seen her, show her clout with her endorsement of candidate Wes Moore, who's running for governor. So I definitely think that, when you do have an incumbent that doesn't have a contested race or a highly contested race, they have more clout to, put their hat behind this very competitive governor race.
Yeah, I was about to say, okay, obviously, we just mentioned or just spoke to Robin Ficker, but on the Republican side, the big race is between former Maryland Commerce Secretary Kelly Schultz, as well as State Delegate Dan Cox. He's out of Frederick. He is Trump endorsed. Schultz, she is Hogan endorsed. Your thoughts about this race? They are, polar opposites within the Republican Party.
Yeah, they are. I'm still, leery about Republicans in general. Even Larry Hogan has shown a little bit more of his Republican side more recently, because I think he's angling obviously for a 2024 run. And so, I think obviously she would be better than the Trump candidate, but you still got to keep your eye on those Republicans. But it is a wise move for her to run more in the successful vein of a Larry Hogan. We don't necessarily have these radical Republicans here in Maryland. So that was a wise choice. I would be really surprised if the Trump-endorsed candidate, triumphs in that one.
Well, I would disagree with you there, because I would argue that in the outlying counties, Eastern Shore, Harford County, Carroll County, Frederick County, obviously those counties and those regions considerably less populated than Montgomery, Prince George's, Charles, which are, really solidly Democratic counties, but they are out there. As I mentioned earlier, if you, because I live in Baltimore and I do travel in, the nether regions, I still, if you drive through Harford County, you will see the signs supporting not Trump endorsed candidates so much, but Donald Trump. you will still see Trump 1 signs there. So so I would argue that they may not be just inside or just outside of the Beltway. But again, with Dan Cox, he's from Frederick, and you do have a lot of Trump support there, Harford County, Carroll County, and parts of northern Baltimore County. So I would say that it is not something that I think can easily be dismissed, although, of course, as we say always, as Baltimore and Prince George's County goes, so goes the election.
Well, you're absolutely right. And, I mean, primary voters aren't necessarily the same as general election voters. And so what would work better in terms of a successful candidate in the general election doesn't always win in the Republican or even in the Democratic primaries. And so the polls have shown that it's a tight race. A lot of people are still undecided. And some people who are decided could change their mind. And so it really is anybody's game on the Republican and on the Democratic side.
Yeah. Before I go to a little bit of the down ballot races, I do want to get your thoughts about the Jim Perez, Peter French show Westmore competition. It seems that this is a three-way race for the Democratic primary election. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's really interesting when you look at the latest polling. None of them are at this point polling even over 20%. There are still a lot of unswayed people or people who are kind of straddling the fence. And I think really what's going to make the difference is who works the hardest for it. And so I know I've seen Westmore out there really, you know, shaking hands, kissing babies. He has a lot more ads that we see. He's really hitting the social media round, and he has a lot of endorsements. But Peter Franchot is a staple in the state. You know, he's already holds a statewide office, and so there is some institutional advantage that he has there. And then Tom Perez, he's a little bit, I mean, I'm actually surprised he's polling as strongly as he is at this point, because I don't think he has as strong of a campaign as the other two. But I think what's interesting is that on these tickets, you're going to have a minority, a person of color, and a black person specifically. Peter Franchot chose a black woman as a lieutenant governor running mate. Westmore has a woman of color as a running mate. She's not a black woman. And so I think that it's good that we're going to have that diversity. But I think it will be interesting to see if people kind of side with Peter Franchot with that kind of back pocket of having a black woman as lieutenant governor, or if they want to say, you know what, it's time that we finally have a black governor and go for Westmore.
So, to that point with Peter Franchot, I mean, he's been around Maryland for a really, really long time. I mean, I remember going to a fundraiser as a reporter to do an interview with him when he was running for Congress against Connie Morella, the moderate Republican back in 1987. Okay.
Yeah.
And so yes, he has certainly been around for quite some time. And also you've got Tom Perez. Maybe his polling is because he is so well known in the most populated county in the state, Montgomery County.
Right, right. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that the newcomer, Westmore, I think his charisma and his ideas are the things that may very well keep him in the race where he may not be as well known. But again, we've seen he's been endorsed by Angela Alsop Brooks, among so many others. And so do endorsements really matter?
I think they do matter to the extent that a person doesn't have an elected, you know, record on their own. And Westmore does not have, he's not held elected office, and he is, you know, kind of an upstart in this sense. He has that charisma, like you said, But I think people will, you know, definitely take into account that people that they trust are backing him. But I'm interested to see if, you know, this is an Andrew Gillum situation. I don't know if you recall when he ran for Florida governor, he never polled in first place. In fact, he polled in third place up until the actual primary election was held. And he ended up winning that primary beyond, above very well-funded white candidates. Now, you know, Westmore is going up against a white man and a Latino man, so that will be interesting. But I'm interested to see if maybe there's a little bit more that isn't necessarily being picked up in the poll that we'll see on Election Day. Not willing to make a prediction, but I do see some parallels between him and Andrew Gillum.
Yeah, well, you could, of course, ask Hillary Clinton, never trust the polls. because that's...
Well, not polls. With this amount of undecided, the polls basically mean nothing right now.
Anthony Brown and Katie Curran O'Malley. That you just said it all right there. they're running for Maryland Attorney General. Katie Curran O'Malley, a former judge, wife of former Governor Martin O'Malley. And then, of course, Anthony Brown, former lieutenant governor, and current U.S. rep. Your thoughts about this? I just don't know what to think about this. It's my understanding that they used to be political allies, but you know, politics makes strange bedfellows and even stranger friends and enemies, and. Even in Katie Curran O'Malley's commercials, and I think if you listen carefully, she said, "Yeah, he was great for Congress, but he's never, tried a case in court." And I think that that's kind of a hair splitting comment. And of course,
right.
And Anthony Brown, tugs at the heartstrings, talking about his sister. Being, the victim of domestic violence and being killed some 15 years ago. Is Anthony Brown popular? Is Katie Curran O'Malley popular? Your thoughts about this race?
Well, I mean, I think obviously O'Malley has some advantages, with her ties to Martin O'Malley. But I think that Anthony Brown is exceptionally talented and qualified, and I actually think that his record in Congress will be a positive for him. Yes, he hasn't tried cases, but the purpose of an attorney general, it's an executive role. Mm-hmm. They're not literally in there arguing before the Supreme Court or whatever the situation may be. You need to have managerial skills, but I'm more interested in the priorities that each candidate is going to take and the lens that they're going to come from. I remember, I don't know if you recall, the young man who was killed shortly before his graduation in a hate crime by University of Maryland.
Yes.
And he really led the charge on, making sure that young man's family got their proper, attention and really, really brought attention to that. And that's the kind of attention that I want to see from an attorney general. And so I think that his ties to the community and his record is going to be a huge benefit. But again, when it comes to these statewide races, it's very competitive for black candidates, more competitive than it has been in the past. But you've pointed out the way that the demographics of the state work. We don't always succeed in getting black candidates the nomination or the win when they get to the general election. So I hope that doesn't cut against them, that he's a black man and this is a white woman.
Mm. Let's talk about the comptroller's race. Brooke Learman, I am absolutely fascinated by the political ads that I have seen where And I say this, only partially tongue in cheek, from Angela also Brooks to my cousin and your cousin. It just seems that every person, people of color, people from across the political and economic and cultural and class spectrum, is supporting her for comptroller. Mm-hmm. I admit This is not a person that I've been familiar with. She was not considered an household name. She was a delegate, but you know, with Franchot now running for governor, am I missing something here about Brooke Learman? It just seems that so many people, she has so much support. Where does she come from? What could this very well mean? Should she become, comptroller or even at least get the primary vote?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes to show relationships, right? I mean, she's a state delegate in Baltimore City, and Adams is the mayor of Bowie, but we know that the real power lies with the county executive. And so I find it interesting that he's self-financing as opposed to Learman. So again, that kind of indicates to me when you're self-financing that you haven't necessarily built that network and those relationships that it really takes to win a statewide race. And so I just think that more so what we're seeing here is not so much talent or particular stance or another. I think it's just showing that she has cultivated relationships that she needed to this date, and that's where it shows up in this kind of close. Well, not, it's not so close right now, but again, all of these polling numbers are so low, it's hard to tell where we're going to ultimately end up at.
Talk to me about that for a moment, because I've asked some of the gubernatorial candidates about turnout, and
yeah.
And one of the things that was said was having the Maryland primary. I think it was Doug Gansler who said having the Maryland primary in the middle of summer was just a no-no. And the impact, he went on to say that people just aren't paying attention. It's the summer. People are thinking about vacation or the vacations that they can't afford because of high gas prices and high jet fuel prices and staycations and people just aren't focused. What's your take on a Maryland primary and what appears to be right now at this moment a low voter turnout? Is it the midterm? What is it, the January 6th committee hearings? What is it?
I think people have a lot going on. I mean, to your point, it is in the middle of July, towards the end of July. A lot of people are still, kind of focused on trying to enjoy the summer, ducking and dodging COVID, ducking and dodging these rising gas prices and food prices and everything. And I just think that when you look at all of the signs, I think people might be like, I'm not willing at this point to check in yet and make a decision. But we did see that there was a surge in early voting in the last couple of days, actually in the final day. And so that is promising that maybe some people just were kind of like, oh, crap, I need to go ahead and get this over with. And we do see a pretty significant turnout on the day of. But honestly, I think probably the biggest thing is that there are so many people running that people have to take time out to really study the races, study the differences, especially when it comes to these, really kind of more obscure races like comptroller, why, people should vote for one person or another. So I think that having it so late in July, I think maybe May or April probably would have been better. And then can we also just acknowledge that it seems like campaigning never ends. We're in Maryland, and so that means that we saw all of the Virginia 2020, the Youngkin stuff. So we never, ever get a break from campaigning. It goes from the presidential to the Virginia to the midterms, and I think people are just a little bit checked out. But I don't think it's going to be that way come election day.
But to your point, and I think this is the big concern, because I mentioned, kindling for my wood burning fireplace with all of the material that I'm getting right now for delegates and state senators.
Yeah.
And I'm excited, as I said in the beginning of the program, because and I think it's unfortunate that people may not be as excited as I am because, again, we have a lot of issues that are coming to the fore as a result of what we've seen happen in the Supreme Court over the past month. And if
right.
you don't pick the delegate who is supporting your issue and your values, your state senator who is supporting your issues or your values, the county executive or the board or the school board member, I would argue that now more than at any other time, these down ballot races are really important.
Absolutely. And, you know, the one beautiful thing about primaries is you get to pick the people that align most with your priorities. You know, so many times people get into November and they're like, I don't like anybody running. Well, did you vote in the primaries? Because that is the time to really make the most impact on ultimately who will be elected. And so if it's important to you to have a Black person for the first time as governor, then you would want to pick, you know, one of the Black candidates running like Wes Moore or John King. But if it's important to you that there's something else, maybe, you know, inflation or whatever the situation may be, that's what you want to vote on, then you make your decision based on that. But now is the time to make sure that you're going to be the most enthusiastic about voting again in November for the general election.
Mm. Reese Colbert, always good to have you on the program. Thank you so much. I'm excited.
Thank you.
I'm excited. I can't wait. Reese, thank you so much. We'll be in touch.
Thank you. Bye.
That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, July 18th. Don't forget, Election Day in Maryland tomorrow. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.